welcome to the Radio Thrift Shop. This is DJ Frederick. Broadcasting in my 15th year here on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London and online at classicalwscs.org. And I'd like to say hello to folks listening on the Global Voice at theglobalvoice.info and out on Pine Cone Radio out in Pine Mountain Club, California. Radio Thrift Shop is your weekly show of musical and media exploration from the past century of recorded sound. Thank you. cool set of easy listening tunes here on the Radio Thrift Shop. That was Brazilian musician Dom Romeo with Escravos de Jô. Before that, Saint Maria and G. DeLucia with Veronica and Michelle. Prior to that, we heard the folk group with a tune called Underworld, Sid Dale with Chelsea Dawn, and we started off with John Bunyan's Progressive Pilgrims, Song Without Words. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London and online at classicalwscs.org. Radio Thrift Shop is heard every Saturday evening at 10 p.m. following Out of the Woods with Chip Colquhoun. So please stay tuned. It's never the same program twice, and we are always on a musical journey. Coming up a little bit later in the program, I have a documentary about a strange electronic musical instrument invented at the turn of the 20th century called the telharmonium. But first, it's time for Radio History Class.
The natural state of any territory, it seems, is binary. The center cannot hold, so it splits in two. France is Paris and La Provence. Russia is European and Asian. Belgium is Francophone and Dutch-speaking. In Italy, the north is distinct from, and even opposed to, the south. So too in England, while in Scotland it is the highlands versus the lowlands. America, for its part, can be described as a pincher-like dichotomy, a bi-coastal entity separated by the flyover states. Of course, some cookies can crumble in more than one way. Not only is Germany still digesting its decades-long divide into capitalist West and communist East, but it also splits into gastronomically distinct northern and southern halves along the so-called white sausage equator. This is more than you thought you'd want to know, isn't it? China is an industrious coastal zone with a western interior in catch-up mode, but it also speaks Mandarin in the north and Cantonese in the south. Now, all this is a way of saying the U.S. can be split in at least three different ways into dual geographies. There's that bicoastal pincher movement, as per above. There's the historical division into north and south. Finally, there's the distinction of back east versus out west. An informal dividing line between the latter pair is the Mississippi, a waterway also used to demarcate the border of 10 states. The Mississippi as a whole also serves as a single divider, surprisingly enough, in the realm of radio, a medium that on the face of it is not as bound by the strictures of territorial demarcation. West of the Mississippi, all radio stations have call signs beginning with K. East of the river, all call signs start with W. Well, most of them. The origin of the KW division goes back just over a century. In 1912, the U.S. federal government started licensing terrestrial radio stations, including experimental stations, that would assign the call letters W to the east and K to the west. Those letters were the result of international agreements hammered out at the International Radio Telegraphic Conferences at the beginning of the 20th century. Appendix 42 to the Radio Regulations of the International Telecommunications Union, ITU, still lists all international call signs as assigned at the 1912 London Conference. For instance, Luxembourg stations will have call signs from LXA up to and including LXZ. Egyptian radio has three different ranges of call signs at its disposal, 6AA to 6BZ, SSA to SSM, and SUA to SUZ. The U.S. has four, not just K and W, that's KAA to KZZ and WAA to WZZ, but also half of A and all of N. It seems that the letters A and N apply only to military radio stations, A to Army and Air Force, N to Navy and Coast Guard, and that they're the basis of the otherwise seemingly random choice for K and W. And here's why. The Morse code for A is dot dash, and for N is dash dot. Add a dash to each, and you get dot dash dash, that's W, and dash dot dash, and that's K. Incidentally, radio call signs are reversed out on the ocean. Ship radios on America's Pacific coast start with W and with K on the Atlantic side. It's unclear whether this practice, which precedes call signs for terrestrial radio, is the reverse by intention. In other words, to facilitate the distinction between stations on land and at sea, or, as some sources state, the result of miscommunication. If that were the case, the aim was originally to extend W call signs to radio stations on land in the west of the country and K to terrestrial stations in the east, but the instructions got scrambled somewhere between the draft of the order and its implementation. Might be. Quite early, the border between K country and W land had to be fixed geographically, but that dividing line lay further to the west than it does now. It actually followed the border between New Mexico in the west with Texas and Oklahoma in the east, then north along Colorado's eastern border with Kansas and Nebraska, Wyoming's eastern limits with Nebraska and South Dakota, and finally Montana's with the Dakotas. I didn't know that, did you? This may have been done to continue distinguishing between ship radios in the Gulf of Mexico, which started with K, and land radios in Texas, which started with W when it was an eastern radio state. A decade into the first federal regulation of station call signs, the KW line was moved to the Mississippi, and that meant Texas and 10 other eastern W states now became western K1s. After January 1923, new radio stations in the switchover states would be assigned a K call initial rather than a W one. But a grandfather clause provided that those stations in those states which already had a W call sign could keep it. This explains some of the anomalous call signs still in existence today in those states. But of course, there are others. There are currently 27 exceptions to the general KW divide, and some of these were, of course, grandfathered in before the rules changed. There are 9 Ks in W country: KDKA, KOTC, KSGM, KFNS, KWAM, KTTG, KFIZ, KQV, and KYW. 18 W's in K-Land include WBAP, WDAY, WEW, WHB, WJAG, WKY, WNAX, WOAI, WOC, WOI, WTAW, WDBQ, WHO, WMT, WSUI, WBBZ, WIBW, and WMBH. In 1987, the Federal Communications Commission noted that the current staff practice was to define the remainder of the KW boundary in Minnesota, that was north of the Mississippi's source, as a line from the Mississippi headwaters to a point at the Canadian border just east of International Falls. Well, got that? That's Frank Jacobs writing an article entitled America's Radio Nations. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
surf riders on the sea. When the wind is warm and the sea is wild, I will be Mother Nature's child. Where do I want to be? With the surf riders on the sea.
Thank you.
A very Eden Abes-oriented set right there here on the Thrift Shop. That was Bob Romeo, who was a contemporary musician who often performed with Eden Abes. We heard Lisbon Street Dance and Zen. Before that, a track that was left off of the Eden's Island LP, Eden Abes with Surf Rider. And prior to that, Eden Abes again from an unreleased track from 1948, Nature Girl, and we started off with Robert Maxwell and his cover version of Eden Abes's, say that three times, twice, it sounds like a beehive, Eden Abes's Nature Boy. And you're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop with the Nature Boy Mountain Man, DJ Frederick, right here on this frequency. We're going to delve into part one of a documentary right now called Magic Music from the Telharmonium. The Telharmonium was a 200-ton behemoth of a musical instrument that was created around the turn of the 20th century, just as the telephone and radio electronics were evolving. So let's travel back in time with the radio time machine here at the Thrift Shop and visit the history of the Telharmonium.
A select group of affluent bankers and investors gathered for dinner at an exclusive private club to hear a business proposition for a revolutionary new invention. A telephone receiver fitted to a horn stood ready on the dining room table. From this horn, the sound of the future would flood the room. The pure, rounded tones of electrical music. A single pair of telephone wires transmitted Handel's Largo as it was being performed on the Telharmonium, 35 miles away. Before leaving the table, the awestruck businessmen would commit more than $100,000.
Sweet and clear over the wires.
It was only a down payment to finance a second, larger telharmonium and purchase a license to operate the instrument in New York. 20 years before the advent of radio, cable broadcasting had become a reality.
It's pure music and it seems to spring from nothing. It's just a pair of wires.
Thaddeus Cahill was a young lawyer and an inventor of mechanisms for pianos and typewriters, living in Washington, D.C. He was one of many who had experimented with transmitting music over the telephone system, but the sound had proven too thin and weak to fill a room. Electrical amplification was unknown. Then, in 1893, he was struck by a grand and radical idea. Why not build up complex musical tones directly from a set of electrical generators? It would be the perfect music machine. It would possess all the strengths of every instrument with the defects of none. Cahill envisioned transmitting music from what he called a central station to tens of thousands of places at once over a network of telephone lines. During the late 1890s, he slowly built, by hand, a small version of this astounding instrument. Completed, it was to weigh 14,000 pounds. Nothing like it had ever been seen or heard before. He showed the Telharmonium to George Westinghouse and the Scottish scientist Lord Kelvin, who was delighted.
One of the greatest accomplishments of the brain of man.
Cahill began to look for money to build a larger version. He demonstrated it for Oscar T. Crosby, a prominent Washington capitalist and a well-known world explorer. Crosby hungrily predicted enormous profits on the scale of the telephones. He decided to back Cahill financially and take control of the enterprise. When the two of them succeeded in transmitting electrical music to the Maryland Club, potential investors plainly saw the fortune to be made in sending long-distance music everywhere, to hotels and clubs, to restaurants and theaters.
Tall city, high class.
Positively hair-raising because of its novelty.
In the summer of 1902, Crosby sent Cahill to Holyoke, Massachusetts to build the second Telharmonium. The busy mill town had scores of machine factories. Cahill, with his brothers George and Arthur, set up a workshop in the Cabot Street Mill. As the second Telharmonium was nearing completion, Thaddeus Cahill hired Edwin Hall Pierce and two other local musicians to play the new instrument. They began to develop various sound qualities, boldly hoping to duplicate the instruments of the orchestra. Pierce's son James was 10 years old when the great machine was completed in 1906. He could remember listening to the Telharmonium.
Just what the sound of it was, as I recall, it was something resembling an organ, a pipe organ. Of course, they could sound like various different instruments. It must have been at least 40 or 50 feet long. Cutting the gears, cutting the teeth in these wheels and things like that, I can remember seeing them do that in the shop there where they were working.
The mainframe of the instrument was 60 feet long, and the mighty giant weighed 200 tons. 10 switchboard panels were jammed with nearly 2,000 switches. Thaddeus Cahill had spent $200,000 to build his central station full size. The first performances were given at the Cabot Street Mill in Holyoke and transmitted to the grand ballroom of the Hotel Hamilton half a mile away. The entire ballroom was filled with sound, despite the absence of electronic amplification, because the output of a single generator on the central station was as great as 14,000 watts. The guests were enthralled.
Extraordinary and delightful.
Sometimes, however, the wires delivered a distorted and annoying sound. The tones would start with a click, as though a metal hammer were striking a string.
All the notes were inaugurated with little explosive puffs.
In the summer of 1906, the Telharmonium was dismantled and transported to New York. The instrument was reassembled and installed a few blocks south of Times Square in the Broadway building. The alternators and switchboards were set up in the basement. The keyboards were housed in a new auditorium constructed on the ground floor. The Broadway building stood opposite the Metropolitan Opera House and the glittering Casino Theater. This expensive stretch of Broadway was known as the Rialto, the heart of the theater district, and a mecca for the cream of fashionable high society. The Telharmonium was a performer's nightmare come true. It was the most hair-raisingly complicated instrument to play in all the history of music. Usually, two musicians played at one time. One would play the bass line and accompanying chords, set his own timbre control switches, and set some of his partners. He would also operate a swell pedal and a separate dynamic manual to control the overall volume. The other musician played the melody and treble harmonies. He constantly stretched his reach to create just intonation intervals and to span four keyboard banks. It was a torment to move around the keyboards, since black and white keys alternated one for one. He would also operate his own swell pedal, along with the remainder of the timbre control switches. The musicians needed to adjust a master tuning control when the drive motor began to slow down and the pitch drifted. They could always phone for help. The first preview concert in New York was presented in September of 1906. Before the concert, a crowd of 900 guests filed into the machinery rooms in the basement to marvel at the transformers, switchboards, and dynamos. During the concert, technical inadequacies were evident. The bass was thin, and the treble had a dull sound. It was ironic. The massive instrument seemed best suited to small pieces of a gentle and unassuming character.
Like a church organ,
much softer
and sweeter.
fashionable restaurants were springing up all over New York, a diversion for the new industrial rich. Many of the finest restaurants were in prominent hotels, among them the Victoria, the Plaza, and the Waldorf Astoria. Huge menus would come to feature more than 500 items. Some establishments boasted four orchestras, each with 30 musicians. Restaurant performers ranked among the best and highest paid players Europe could offer. The combined salaries of New York restaurant musicians exceeded $1 million in 1 year. Replacing them with his new service was the goal of Oscar T. Crosby and his New York Electric Music Company.
Up on the river along with the miracle man that I am, and two bound lovers and two bound brothers of mine in the plan. I don't know what I did, but I did, and I am. I don't know where you go when you're sad, but I ride. Everything lies inside. Leave all your cares and troubles behind. I don't care what you got to hide. Yes, ride. Pull out the train for the Liberty Line. You'll be giving me yours, I'll be giving you mine. I don't care what you've been denied. I've been high and low, traveling on the go, down below where I've been. Slipping overhead, driving the motor dead, giving away to the green. Show me the road, I'll be leaving the load. I got all I need. So come on, brothers and sisters and lovers, and ride. Everything lies inside. Leave all your cares and troubles behind. I don't care what you got to hide. Yes, ride. Roll out the train for the Liberty Line. You'll be giving me yours, I'll be giving you mine. I don't care what you can deny.
That old clock on the wall says it's time to wrap it up for this hour of the Radio Thrift Shop. That was Cimarron from their 45 Rings, and before that we heard Dee Manusa with a tune called Fine and Funky. Started that off with the Miracle Man, Mr. Bob Carpenter, from his fantastic LP, Silent Passage. Well, thank you for joining me here on the Thrift Shop, where we cruise up and down the dusty aisles of music from the past century of recorded sound. Keep your ears open. It's always a musical adventure. Thanks for listening.